Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call the Property and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And here's how things are going to work today, a little different than what I had indicated yesterday. Today we're going to hear an overview on the spreadsheet from Ms. Schill. And then yesterday we had to move quite quickly over the overview. So if there's any questions or any areas on that bill that you would like to go over a little bit more, we'll entertain members' questions on that. And then for the rest of the time will be public testimony. We will not do any amendments or markup of the bill today. That will be done entirely tomorrow. So no markup, no amendments today. We'll do all of that tomorrow. For the day is overview yet, and then public testimony. So with that, Ms. Schill, if you would proceed, and if you'd start from the beginning on the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Kathy Schill. I'm with House Fiscal Analysis. And before I even start with the, once again, you have three different spreadsheets. You have an 8.5 by 11, which is entitled Property Tax Division Report Expenditure Tracking. Then you have another that is a single page that is entitled House Property Tax Division Report versus Governor's Revised Budget Recommendations, and that basically shows the changes of the basic items as a single page. And then we have the four page, and it's probably two pages for you that decided, the budget recommendations of where all of these changes fit into the overall budget.
Before I go on, Ms. Schill, I want to make sure all members have that. So we're, before you begin, we're all in gear. And I've...
We have it in the very back.
It should be in the very back. Does everyone have all three of those documents?
I haven't got all them up.
All right. So we've got this one right here. And in the longer one, and in that final one, I don't. Oh, okay. And then here it is. This is a two-pager, right?
Okay. And they each should have the date March 31st.
All right.
Because we've included some technical updates and some formula, making sure that the formulas are adding up accordingly.
Please proceed, Ms. Schill.
Okay. Before I turn to the spreadsheet, I have two housekeeping items. The first is the targets that were set for all planning committees. And that was done on the 28th, which was last week. And that's important because it shows...
Ms. Schill, what document are you working on?
My own document, sir. I'm just pointing out that we have targets set for 10 and 11 that are given to us by resolution, and that target for 10 and 11 is a cut level of $250 million. And so you will see that at the bottom of each of these sheets that we are following that particular cut. So, for example, on the first sheet, if you go right to the very end, there is a line 82 that talks about targets, and you will see the targets for house tax agent credits at negative $250 million for 10 and 11 and negative $362 million for the out years 12 and 13. And that was established by resolution. The other thing that we have to pay attention to was the K-12 shift that was also embedded in the resolution. And even though you won't see that total, I have it here as a negative $11.4 million, it will impact our spreadsheet, and I will explain that when I get to it, but there are a couple of different items that have to do with that K-12 shift. Currently, we have a 90-10 arrangement as we provide monies for our K-12 schools, and that in the overall House proposal will go to 73-27. So more on that as we go through the sheet. Beginning with lines 10 through 12, this entire area is property tax refunds and deferrals. As you can see, the updated bill 2204, Representative Marquardt. This is the homeowner property tax refund change. Spending is included here in fiscal 11, $18,900,000, $19.3 in FY 12 and 13, and $20 even in FY 13. So, $19.3 and 12 and $20 in 13.
And you feel we're working off of
the... We're working off the base.
Working off the
FY 11.
And this one.
And this is where we picked up from
yesterday.
Line 13 reflects Representative Marquardt's new property tax deferral item, impacts of $100,000 in FY 11, $105,000 in FY 12, and $110,000 in FY 13. Now, this has the different components that Ms. Baker had mentioned yesterday, and you can see that in the comment area. Maximum income of $75,000 removes marriage penalty if one claimant is age 65, reduces the interest from 5% to 3%. And this particular instance reflects a 20% increase in claims. As you move down the sheet to line 15, Representative Marquardt, House File 511, seasonal rec residential deferral. Cost impacts there include both the revenue estimate and the fiscal note impacts having to do with administration on line 16. Line 17 is the subtotal. Impact for fiscal 10 is $109,000, fiscal 11, $68,000, fiscal 12 and 13, $108,000 and $158,000. Now we move into the area of lines 19 through 24 having to do with the changes to the market value homestead credit. Line 19 first talks about the reimbursement cut for cities, where we basically have reductions in FY 10, $19.7 million, fiscal 11, $22.2 million, and that carries out into the tails. There has been an update to the percentage of ANPC provided by Ms. Dalton. This is a technical correction. So the ANTC cut of 1.211% in FY10 and an ANTC cut of 1.889% in FY11. The totals on my sheet do not change, but those percentages are corrected. We do have a PTR impact associated with market value credit. You can see on line between 19 and 20. And then the other part that happens with market value credit is House File 2204. This is the market value credit reduction that is paired with line 11 with the homeowner PTR. So you can see those reductions, FY 11, negative 20 million, FY 12, 21.2 million, and negative 21.2 million, and FY 13, a negative 22.1 million. Now we move down associated with the market value credit, we have some of those impacts that I was talking about. Not only the PTR impact that you can see there, but we also have the K-12 shift 7327 and the levy recognition shift. And let me give you a little bit of background. By cutting the market value credit, and then you'll see also as we reduce the disparity reduction aid, we are reducing state aid to schools, creating two different shift effects, the payment shift and the levy recognition shift that the spreadsheet needs to account for. You can see these on lines 23 and 24 and 27 and 28 of the expenditure tracking sheet. The payment shift from 9010 to 7327 moves the school portion of the aid payment from the current fiscal year to the next fiscal year, resulting in aid savings, and you can see 711 and 337 in fiscal 10. Now for the levy recognition shift, additional net levy created by a reduction in the credit is shifted forward to schools, resulting in lower aid payments for the current fiscal year. And so you have that impacting both items, both market value credit and disparity reduction aid.
Sure.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions on this property tax refund section before we move on. Michelle, on the homeowner property tax refund changes, the reduction in certain income thresholds would obviously save us from money, and the increases to maximum refund caps would increase the cost. And so the numbers here, is that the net of those two changes?
Michelle?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, I'm looking back to the fiscal note where they have already, or excuse me, revenue estimates, where they have already combined those two together. Reading from the revenue estimates, reducing income thresholds would increase the amount of property tax eligible for the refund, approximately $279,000. Current filers would have an increased amount of property tax eligible for the refund. Maximum credit available, maximum credit. It's got to be in there. It is a combined impact. And,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lanning.
Could we get the separate numbers, you know, what the one saves versus what the one costs? And I'm not asking for it right now, but I would, or maybe somebody already has it.
Mr. Hines, Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, both of the changes in the PTR increase the PTR. So we reduced the income threshold, which means the amount of your tax you have to first pay before you qualify for any. So we reduced that, and that makes more of a person's property tax potentially eligible for the PTR. And then increasing the maximum also increases the amount of PTR spending. So both of the direct changes increase spending. I can't give you the breakdown of the two pieces combined, but they're both in the same direction. I just wanted to clarify that.
That's interesting. I thought if we lowered the income thresholds, that would mean people would get less of a refund. But apparently that's not the way this works.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, it's correct. The threshold means how much income do you, or what percentage of your income do you have to pay out of pocket before the PTR begins to kick in. So when we lower it from 2.1% to 2%, we're saying now you only have to pay the first 2% of your income before you start in property tax, before you start getting PTR, whereas we used to say 2.1% of your income. So we just basically said a little bit more of your property tax is now liable to be paid by the state through the PTR, but that's the direction that movement is.
Okay, one follow-up, a couple follow-ups. And apparently, the upper income limit, as I recall, under current law, people could earn up to $100,000 in income and still be eligible for a property tax refund. Those limits have not changed in with this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. This is not affecting the income limit in that sense at all. And Ms. Baker showed me that the current is right at like 96.9, so right up around that 100,000. But we're not, this bill is not affecting that number at all. And I think those people, I believe those are not changing their thresholds either. The table in the bill summary only shows that the last place where there's a change is up to 67,000 of income, but that's kind of a side point. We're not affecting the income limits that PTR applies to at all.
So thank you. That clarifies those questions. One last question on this section. Thank you. The parenthetical material here, where it says save 6,000 PTR recipients from current refund limits. Can you explain that? I'm not sure I understand what that is.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, we had some conversation with Department of Revenue with respect to this particular note, and we have 279 current filers. And apparently the all would be affected, or a good deal of them would be affected by this change, but in particular 6,000 would get a refund, whereas if this change were not implemented, they would not. And so that's why the 6,000 is in the notation, because it makes a big difference for them. Others would have a change in their property tax refund, most of it an increase.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michelle, the line 22, you got me grabbing the mic now. Lucky me, line 23, when we take the K-12 shift to 73, is that change item as a baseline of 90, or is the baseline 80 in the governor's budget rec? So in other words, the difference is 7-11?
Right. This is the difference between the 90-10, if you said, the difference between the 90 and the 73, and the governor, as I understand it, reduces it to an 80-20 situation.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, now Michelle, if you said, I'm having a difficult time understanding, I guess I understand, I'm looking at line 23, and then I guess it would be 23 and a half with a just K-12 shift and a levy recognition shift. Why that would have an impact on the market value homestead credit reduction, and if you could just kind of walk that through me, why it would result in a higher market value homestead credit expenditure. I'm not understanding that.
Okay. If you move to the four-page spreadsheet, and mine's 49 and 50, so the market value homestead credit, and you can see the split between the school and the non-school portions. What we need to do is recognize the impact when we reduce the market value credit on what it's doing to the money that would actually be going to the schools. And so, for example, the early recognition shift is in anticipation of the reduction that we are going to be doing in fiscal 11, and so the K-12 budget would prepare to adjust the aid accordingly to make up what that difference would be. Because you have the anticipation of the reduction in aid would increase the levy. Perhaps Mr. Hines can help me out on that one.
Mr. Hines. At least, I feel better not being the only one who... Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I can assure you far from the only one. This is complicated for all of us. The reduction in the market value credit really means that more property taxes are being paid by, because there's less taken off the statement, so therefore the school, as Michelle said, is both a school and a non-school effect. This is only related to the school part. So school property taxes will actually be a little bit higher. And so the levy recognition shift shows up as a savings in the year before, because what the levy recognition shift is really doing is it says that the state instructs school districts to take money that comes in the May property tax statement, which is normally for the following fiscal year, and count it in the current fiscal year. So because we lower market value credit, we essentially raise school levies, and we get to save money in the previous year through that mechanism. So that's the first line. Now the second, the adjust K-12 shift, I have to think about this one a little bit more, means that there's less state aid going out in for the FY11 school year, and so we don't benefit as much from shifting it, and I think that's why it ends up showing it as a state cost. I know those two always go in the opposite direction, and the levy one's a lot easier for me to understand than the aid one. So I mean, if that explanation isn't clear, let me think about it a little more and see if I can say it differently, or if Ms. Schill wants to jump back in.
I did consult with Mr. Crow before coming down to make sure that, because I have a longer explanation in my notes, but basically, yes, they do move in opposite directions, and the unusual part, obviously, is having the recognition aid come in having an impact, which is a cost savings in 10, but that's in anticipation of what is going to take place in 11.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
And my apologies, I don't want to hang up the committee on this issue, but so when we reduce the market value homestead credit appropriation, I understand the PTR impact due to market value homestead credit because property taxes are going up, so people qualify for more of a refund. I get that part of it. But the K-12 shift, when we are shifting revenues into a future year, I'm not seeing the correlation to the market value homestead credit. I'm not understanding how those two things are linking. And the second point is, with the levy recognition shift, I understand the savings in fiscal year 10, but I'm not understanding how that ties to the market value homestead credit program. Maybe I should just talk to Mr. Crow about this.
Here's what we're going to do with this point, because I think Representative Garofalo, you bring up a great point, is we'll come back and visit this first thing tomorrow. So if there's some input that Mr. Crow can make and everyone, and we can provide that information. So let's come back first thing tomorrow, and we will look at how all that interacts. So thank you. Michelle, if you would continue.
Okay. I'm a little reluctant to go to disparity reduction aid, but that is the next item between lines 25 and 29. And once again, you see the similar impact. Not only is the reduction on line 25 a negative $4.5 million in fiscal 11, negative $5.2 million in each of the out years. And then, of course, you have the PTR impact associated with that reduction, and then the school impact on both the K-12 shift and the levy recognition shift. Moving down to the local aid section, line 31 is the elimination of the growth in the local government aid, savings of $10.5 million in FY11 and a savings of $31.99 million in each 12 and 13. And then we have the reductions that Ms. Dalton talked about yesterday, where we have cuts in each of the years, negative $30.3 million in fiscal 10, negative $46 million in fiscal 11, and then in each of the out years, a negative $9.7 million. And once again, this reflects the updated technical correction for the ANTC. The PTR impact due to reduced local government aid is reflected in line 33. Now, as we move down the page, we have House lines 35 through 41, approximately. House File 488, Representative Cole, City of Mayor, a big aid-based increase. This is a portion of the local government aid appropriation and therefore does not have any impact on this sheet. Whereas House File 1885, Representative Dietrich, has a cost impact of $225,000 in fiscal 11. This is the city aid for the payment to Coon Rapids. Moving to line 38, House File 2020, Representative Mark Hort, eliminate program aid. Once again, we have the growth eliminated, negative $4.5 million in fiscal 11, negative $13.84 million in each of the out years. And then we have the county program aid offset. This is in association with the county option for new revenue. This we've accounted for a cost savings to county program aid of $15.7 million in fiscal 10, and then each $100 million in fiscal 11, 12, and 13. As noted by Ms. Dalton yesterday, we are taking a pretty conservative approach to this cost savings measure. It might change as we await the scoring from Department of Revenue. We've also included the PTR impact due to reduced county program aid, and you can see that as $1.2 million, $1.07 million in FY12, and $1.17 million in FY13.
Mr. Mr. Chairman.
Moving on down.
Representative Lanning. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to better understand this county program aid proposal here and the local option sales tax, I'm wondering if we could get examples of a couple of counties, maybe a larger county, a smaller county, and what the difference would be in terms of their ability to, and their levels of aid, if they had the tax or if they didn't.
Representative Lanning, and I think this handout right here might answer some of those questions. And it's projected impact of a county imposing an optional 1/2 cent local sales tax. And Ms. Dalton, would you, if you take a look at that, and just what would be some of the better columns to look at as far as the impact on whether or not you, what you would be cut in county program aid if you did not, you know, go with the local option sales tax?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, column 5 of that printout shows what the governor's county program aid loss is. If you remember, the governor had two possible losses. This is the higher level. Column 7 shows what the county program aid loss would be if a sales tax is enacted. The number that I think you want that is not on here is what would be the county program aid cut if the governor's proposal was not enacted. It would be less than the governor's cut. And how it relates to if you have a sales tax enacted depends on what your sales tax base is. For instance, and I'm going to use Benton because it's right up there at the very front. Under the governor's proposal, its county program aid cut is $881,000. I'm sorry, under column 5, which is $22 per capita. If Benton County did not have a county program aid, did not enact a local sales tax, it would have a number that's slightly less than that because we're going to only raise $100 million total instead of $110 million, and we're using essentially the same form of making the cuts as the governor had. So it would be something about 9% less than $881,000. Now, if the city of Benton, the county of Benton, however, imposed a local sales tax, its county program aid cut would be zero, and that's because after you subtract off the local city sales tax obligations in Benton County, because it's got part of the St. Cloud sales tax base in it, the new money that would go to St. Cloud is less than go to Benton County is less than $7 per capita. So they would get no county program aid cut. This is the equalization part of this program. They would keep all of their county program aid, and they would get about $3 per capita in new revenue from the sales tax, and that's what shows up in columns 11 and 12. They would get about $98,000 of new revenue. They would have no county program aid cut.
Yeah, Representative Lanning.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, what I would find would be helpful in getting at my question here is what the tax would raise per county. Do we have
Ms.
Dalton?
Mr. Chair, the column 11 is the column 3 is the new county sales tax revenue net of the current local taxes that would become obligations. So this is after you subtract off the obligation of the city, the existing city taxes. This would be the new money that those counties would each raise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still find this confusing, and I think this is a new approach, and I think it's real helpful for us to be clear what the options would actually do to each county. And the counties are obviously going to want to be clear in understanding that, too.
Why don't we do this? And I think, Representative Lanning, you bring up a great point. What if there's a chance before tomorrow that you could meet with Ms. Dalton or in members, if we could do that? And we could also talk about this as one of the first items tomorrow also, if we wanted, just how to, because I think that is important to know how all that works and what all these numbers mean. And we haven't had time to go over this spreadsheet. And I want to get the testimonies today. So this is something that if you can meet with Ms. Dalton prior to tomorrow, otherwise, Ms. Dalton, maybe you could spend a few minutes going over this tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, I could probably do a couple of illustrative counties and kind of rearrange it so it's a little easier to walk through what is happening to a county, both if it chooses not to impose a sales tax and if it chooses to impose a sales tax.
Very good. If that would be all right, Representative Lanning, we will do that also first thing tomorrow.
Thank you.
Very good. Michelle, I am going to give you about 4 minutes to finish off the back side because I wanted to start public testimony at 11:15. So just cover those numbers that have some significance to them.
That sounds fair, Mr. Chair. Moving on down, the next item with the fiscal impact is Representative Council on line 53. We have a cost impact of -$39,000 in fiscal 10, -$42,000 in fiscal 11, and -$42,000 in fiscal 12. Line 53 and a half is Representative Zunke's cell with the, and I don't know why it didn't number there, having to do with the extending to surviving spouses of disabled military veterans the existing market value homestead credit value exclusion. That actually has a fiscal impact in the tails, -$100 in fiscal 12 and -$220 in fiscal 13. We can move down the sheet. You can see a number of bills not having any or having a negligible impact or an unknown impact. The next item with an impact is Representative Lenchewski's study for metropolitan fiscal disparities at $50,000 in fiscal 10. That's line 63. Moving further on down the sheet, we come to the group of bills associated with the reform, the accountability, value, and efficiency efforts of the three subcommittees. You'll see that on lines 67, 68, 69, and 70. First of all, Representative Lanning's bill does have a cost impact of $121,000 in fiscal 10 and $5.5 million fiscal 11, almost $9 million in fiscal 12, and $4.8 million in fiscal 13. Representative Marquardt's...
Michelle, would you explain that? I mean, that's not the cost of his council.
No. In fact,
that's because of the levy limit.
There is a cost impact of the council, which is very modest compared to the rest, which is the levy limit repeal. And as you can see, that it grows in a couple of years.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what revenue has done here, I would strongly disagree with. They're assuming that without levy limits, the taxes are automatically going to go up. The local governments are going to raise their taxes substantially, and I don't think that's a valid assumption. That is a worst-case scenario, and I think this is grossly exaggerated.
Thank you very much. Ms. Schill.
Representative Lanning, we are still waiting for this bill to be scored. And so as all of the components have come together, it is a challenge for the Department of Revenue to make sure that we reflect everything here. And so we are waiting the scoring of this entire package.
Representative Lanning, as I understand it, this is PTR costs going up because they're assuming that property taxes are going to go way up.
And Representative Lanning, you know, in the last 37 years, we've had levy limits for 27 years. That was before last year. And if you look at the studies, other than 2 years after major reform, after the Minnesota Miracle in 71, which the next year, 72, and after the 01, which was 02, if you took those 2 years out, in the 10 years we did not have levy limits, the average statewide city levy increase was less than the years we had levy limits in those other 25 years. So I tend to agree with what you're saying there, Representative. So we're going to finish sustainable forest off, if you would, please, and the contribution refund.
Correct. Line 74 and line 75 have two reductions. The sustainable forest in particular, this contained in this proposal is a maximum acre payment of $6. It is currently at $8.61. And as you can see the notations here, this is one of the fastest growing lines in the entire budget. And it was the choice to maximize the payment at just $6 per acre starting in fiscal 11. And then there's also a cap at $400,000. The last item on the sheet having an impact is reduction of the political contribution fund, 20% reduction, maximum refund of $40 per individual, $80 per couple, with a cost impact, cost savings of about $1 million, $1.2 million in fiscal 11, and $1 million thereafter.
Ms. Hill, thank you very much for that presentation. I'm going to ask right now, how many in the audience would like to testify? Let me just get a raise of hands so that we can space this out in the next 45 minutes. Raise your hands nice and high here. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Around 20. I'm seeing around 20. So we are going to have 2 minutes allowed for testimony. The gavel will come down at 2 minutes. And it's going to be like the Supreme Court. When that red light comes on, you have to finish your sentence. And so if you would just come down to the front row and we'll take the first one, state your name, and we will proceed, and we will go to the end until 12 o'clock for public testimony. So if someone would please come forward. And we will be keeping very close tabs on the time here today. Okay, very good. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Abner. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. The Council of Nonprofits appreciates the inclusion of House File 872 in the division report. As you know, we have worked hard with nonprofits, with the Department of Revenue, and with the assessors to propose language that fulfills your request that we neither expand nor contract the property tax exemption for nonprofits. We've worked hard to clarify the standards that a nonprofit must meet, and we believe that we have fulfilled that obligation. It's been, as we said last week, 16 meetings and 24 drafts, but we have language that all have agreed to, and we are grateful for the support that you have given us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chair Marquardt and members of the committee, my name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project at the Council of Nonprofits. I'd like to thank you for the strong commitment you've made in this bill to addressing the increasing regressivity of Minnesota's tax system. The tax incidence study shows that rental property taxes have been growing significantly and becoming more regressive. The renter's credit plays an important role in moderating that regressivity, and this bill allows it to continue to play that role. I encourage you to maintain the strong support for the renter's credit as this bill progresses and as you go into conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mann. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Barnhart. I'm here on behalf of the North Metropolitan Mayors Association. Very briefly, number one, thank you to the division. Given the magnitude of the problem being faced, the $6.4 billion shortfall, I think it is fair to say that the impact on local governments that you have proposed is markedly less than many have been anticipating. Thank you for that. Number two, very specifically on behalf of cities, the proposal to do away with levy limits, because there still will be cutbacks. Again, a thank you for that being in the bill. Very briefly, and this might be in the category of I wonder what, I testified, I think, about 3 or 4 weeks ago that disparities are not strictly a metro versus outstate phenomena, that the ability to raise revenue, in fact, in the metro area is very skewed with a difference of more than 5 to 1 from the richest to the poorest, even with fiscal disparities. Last year there was a lot of work done, the Unity proposal. One of the things was several cities, such as Brooklyn Park, Spring Lake Park, came back on the formula. Cities that everybody feel had legitimate needs. Unfortunately, they have now exited the formula. It is understandable for 2009, you know, because the budgets have been set for a uniform approach to cutting back. Wondering is, what about 2010? In 2011, you would let the formula run. 6 years ago, in 2003, cutback was in a 3, but then in the next year, in fact, they let the formula run. I don't know the outcome of what that would be. I wonder. That still does not get away from thank you for a proposal which is markedly less of an impact on local government and for the legitimate proposal.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director with Metro Cities. I'd like to thank the Chair and the Committee for their work this session on, particularly with all the work groups that you undertook to look at our property tax system and to look at value to the taxpayer and just the level of work that the Committee has done this year. We're greatly appreciative. A couple of quick comments. These are the bill that we do support. We support the fiscal disparity study language that is included in the bill, the elimination of levy limits, the notice, the property tax notice that eliminates reference to state-paid market value homestead credit. We would have liked to have seen the bill go a little bit further in terms of restructuring the credit so that it is more of a direct credit to the taxpayer, but we do appreciate the work that the committee has done in that respect. In terms of the local government aid and market value homestead credit cuts, we obviously we don't support cuts to those programs, but we do appreciate the work that you've done to try to reduce the magnitude of the cuts. And I would we haven't had a lot of time to really look to digest what the incidence of these cuts will be on our member cities, but I would just like to voice our continued support for the LGA study that was included in the 2008 tax bill. That was put into place to take a look at the formula, and we're still interested in that. So I'll end it with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next testifier. And if someone else would take the other chair so we can keep moving here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Buzz Andrews, and I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association. I'm here to speak in opposition to Section 6, the County Local Option Sales Tax. This is consistent with our long-standing opposition to local option sales taxes. We think that creates an even continued, more confusing hodgepodge of local taxing jurisdictions. You know, whether you consider the local option sales tax, the quarter cent metro tax, the Hennepin County stadium tax, the 3/8 that's just been added through the constitutional amendment, and so on. This also creates a burden on consumers who have to pay higher costs for goods through these additional taxes, and it also creates a burden for retailers who have to collect this and compete against internet sellers who are not collecting the tax. It makes it even more difficult for them to compete. And lastly, I would say we think the threshold for the reverse referendum is unrealistically high for voters to seek. So with that, I stand for questions if you have any, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, members, my name is Steve Peterson with Flaherty and Hood. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I'd first like to thank you for the mandate relief that is in this bill, and second, I'd like to thank personally the Marquardt, Dietrich, and Lanning for their work on the working groups, which was an unprecedented amount of interaction between the public and interest groups in those areas. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, of course, is disappointed that there was aid cuts in 2009, given the fact that the aid cuts for 2008 are being done in 2009, so these are on top of that. However, the cuts to market value credit and LGA is a vast improvement in size, scope, and manner compared to what the government's cuts were. And with that, I'd like to yield the rest of my time to Gary Carlson, who said he might need more than 2 minutes.
Very good. All right, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Alyssa Schlander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Mr. Chair, I am here to oppose the section of the bill that allows counties to increase the sales tax to 7% on motor vehicle sales. First of all, the issue of taxing motor vehicle sales is a bit different than how the general sales tax applies to other items, but just assuming that it applies for a minute, as the general sales tax does, increasing the MVEST to 7% would really create a competitive disadvantage to dealers that are located near counties that would opt not to impose the tax. You know, an average vehicle costs about $25,000, and increasing the MVEST to 7% would be a $1,750 tax. And I can tell you, customers will drive to another county to save $125 on their tax bill when they're purchasing a vehicle. Furthermore, the current MVEST in the state of Minnesota is already the highest motor vehicle sales tax in the five-state area, allowing, you know, a 7% MVEST is just, we're encouraging people to take their sales and their registrations outside of the state of Minnesota, which we absolutely would not want to see happening. In fact, in South Dakota, the motor vehicle sales tax is only 3%. So a customer, you know, really has some incentive when they're looking at the comparison between a 3% motor vehicle sales tax and a 7% motor vehicle sales tax. That they would save quite a bit of money by driving next door. Secondly, I just have to mention, counties already have the authority to levy special taxes on motor vehicles, and just gave a handful of counties the ability to levy a wheelage tax on motor vehicles, which several of them have already done. And then finally, I just have to mention too,
Go ahead, finish your sentence if you would.
So my problem with the ability to allow this tax to be levied on 297B purchases, which is motor vehicle sales, is that 297B taxes are collected by the deputy registrar at the time of vehicle registration. So it provides some tricky administration issues for us, because we collect them at the deputy registrar level because those taxes apply also to sales between private parties,
thanks,
not just
everybody. You didn't get the gong because you were opposed to the bill. You just were the first one that hit.
That's fine. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Heskey. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to address two issues. First, thank you for something that's not included in the bill, and that is an increase in the statewide property tax. We appreciate the fact that no increase or even shifting of tax burden within that tax is included in the bill. Second, I also echo Ms. Shalander's comments about the county sales tax. We have several concerns about that. First, many people know that businesses pay 45% of the state's sales tax, so it is a business tax as well as a consumer tax. Second, I think there's going to be wide disparities between counties on their sales tax base, how much they're going to be able to generate from this this source of revenue, which I think ultimately down the road couldn't lead us to another equalization formula, which we just don't think is a great use of resources. And then finally, as Ms. Shalander said, this tax does apply to 297B, so it adds an extra cost to the price of automobiles at a time where the dealers are in certainly significant difficulties. It is significantly different than the typical $20 add-on that local sales taxes have in this state. So for those reasons, the potential impact on motor vehicle sales tax collections, which impact road funding, we certainly have opposed and have concerns about the county sales tax part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to hear from the townships. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sewell with the Minnesota Association of Townships. We too would like to thank you for all your work and for minimizing the impact. Particularly if I'm reading the spreadsheets correctly, it looks like you did listen to our concerns about the PILT reductions that were in the governor's budget, and those have been well addressed. I won't repeat the comments of other local government associations, but I would just throw out for consideration on page 31 of the bill, there's some new notice requirements of subsequent levy meetings, and of course at the township level we only do the one levy setting meeting, and so I'd be happy to work with staff this afternoon, but that's just one area I think we need to have a technical amendment for tomorrow, because we don't do multiple meetings. With that, I'll yield any time I have to either the county or the city.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I just want to thank you for including Article 3, which was obviously Representative Lanning's work group report. The mandate piece obviously is moving in a number of different committees in the legislature this year, but the fact that the property tax division has recognized that as an issue for counties, we really appreciate. I think people are most interested in the county revenue reform piece, and we are still looking at this. I know when we were last here, we said we're going to take a close look at it, and we are. We don't have an agreement with an AMC as to what our position is at this point. I think that some folks see a lot of promise, and some folks see some pitfalls. I think one thing that has come up, the patchwork issue that was raised by the dealers did come up. One of our folks suggested potentially imposing the tax statewide with an opt-out for counties, and that might make it a little bit different discussion in the county boardroom about whether or not it's a political decision versus a policy decision of the sales tax. I think the other concern that we've heard has been how we deal with the border areas. I think everyone that lives in those areas is aware of the unique challenges. That said, we're not closing the door on this. We're really trying to understand what the impacts are. I think we really appreciate, again, the diversified revenue that you're offering here. And we are very serious about that. And I think what our members are trying to balance as they look at this is whether or not the sales tax is a viable resource in their area and what's happening to program aid and how do those levers interact. Because I think that's really the crux of the issue for them as we go forward. How do we balance our budgets with what's happening? And there are a number of cuts coming in other areas of the legislature as well. So, again, it's a lot to think about, and we hope to come to you with a firm proposal in the near future. But at this point, it's just a lot for us to think about, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate that very much. And I thank you for all your work with the various working groups and so forth, and all the local groups, government groups that did that during the course of this putting this bill together. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Lori Meyer, and I'm Senior Vice President with Agent Services of Minnesota. And I'm here to speak in behalf of or in support of the language in Article 5, Section 3 of the Division Report. This is language that was developed in cooperation with the Minnesota Department of Revenue in order to maintain the current tax-exempt status of nonprofit nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. The language is needed in light of a recent Supreme Court case in Under the Rainbow, where the case found that for institutions of purely public charity, those organizations must give away something for free or at a substantially reduced rate in order to have their tax-exempt status. The nursing homes in Minnesota are quite unique in that we have a series of state rules and statutes that actually prohibit nursing homes from charging their residents any more or less than the rates that are established by government. So in essence, in order for a nursing home to comply with the Supreme Court's ruling for charity, a nursing facility would then be in violation of state rules. In their recent assessment and classification report, the Department of Revenue recommended that there be separate legislation that gives a specific exemption for nonprofit nursing homes that do not discharge due to inability to pay. The language that you have before you has been narrowly crafted so that it does only affect nursing facilities, and it simply is to preserve the current exempt status that they have. Thank you very much to Representative Marquardt and the committee for your support of this.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I've had two documents passed out, one showing the proposed county cuts with and without the sales tax, and then a PowerPoint that will cover some of the issues. First, I want to thank the chair and Representative Lanning, the other members of the working groups for the mandate relief items included in this bill. We're hopeful by the conclusion of session, some of the larger mandates that face counties with the maintenance of effort requirements in the human services area and also the maintenance of effort here in the libraries can be, we get further relief than what's been given so far. We are very concerned with the levy limit provisions in the bill. They're staying on counties while the cities are being relieved of them. We think that you need to put a floor on the levy limit adjustment if it's going to stay in that manner, because under current law, the inflation adjustment is only 1.2% for 2010 and 0.5% for 2011, far less than the 3.9% that was anticipated when the law was enacted last spring.
We continue to want to examine, participate with you in looking at the local sales tax option, but if you truly want us to use this new revenue source, we think you should give us the same powers that we have currently with our property tax levy, and that is without being subject to a local a reverse referendum. That was the model that was used for the stadium tax, the model that was used for the metro tax here. We still see no reason why that should not be the same here, as well as that's also true for us. With regards to the 2009, not the 2010 CPA cut, we think that you basically should follow the past practice that it should be a uniform percentage of levy aid base, not a uniform percentage of adjusted net tax capacity. We have no authority to levy back for that cut, and a fairer distribution of that is to do in proportion to the budget, which is done. Final issue that I'll point you to is the change in the TNT schedule. We have been here innumerable times along with the administration, both the Department of Education and the Department of Revenue, to tell you the change simply does not work. Unless you move up the dates of the certification of our aids, of our levy limits, which the bill does not do, this is simply an impossible schedule. It will not be met, regardless of what you put in the law. You've changed a few of the upfront changes when the school districts, when the cities, when the counties certify their levy by 10 days, but at the back end, you've changed the date at which the truth and taxation statement has to be out by 26 days. There is simply no way, given all the other duties that we perform, administrations of both the primary and general elections, collections of the second half property tax payments, that this schedule can be met. I strongly encourage you to drop that provision from the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you very much. Also, just one clarification on Article 8, it does allow you to levy back your 09 cuts, so you can do that under Article 8. Yes, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Cities, and I won't use Steve Peterson's time. Let me say that we do appreciate all the efforts of Representative Lanning on the mandate relief and reform, and also pledge to work with you on the three commissions and working groups that were established, the Council on Local Results and Innovation, the Property Tax Working Group, and the Legislative Commission on Mandate Reform. I think it's time for a good dialogue between the state and local units of government on those very issues, and I think with some of the creative minds around here, we can come up with some good ideas for future reforms, as well as what Representative Lanning has already included in this bill. On the mandate relief, we do support the compromise that Representative Lanning led on the library maintenance of effort changes. That was a difficult discussion, and I think we reached a good compromise. Appreciate Representative Lanning's efforts on that. We do appreciate the repeal of levy limits on cities. It's contained in Article 1, and appreciate the efforts of Representative Dabney here to help us pursue that levy limit repeal. On the cuts that are imposed, we don't have a specific specific position supporting or opposing those cuts. Obviously, we think those are far superior to the cuts that were proposed by the governor in his bill. We think they do acknowledge the fact that we had a very large cut in the December aid payments that were due to be paid to cities, and this seems to acknowledge that to a much greater degree than the governor's proposal. So we do feel that those cuts are more balanced and even. In Article 8, I just want to draw your attention to two things that we really do strongly support. Number one is a proposal that we verbally made to Representative Lincheski early in the session that would allow cities or counties to recertify their levy in case of an unallotment in December. We think that this is a workable provision. It does allow recertification up until January 15th, and we think it's a good idea to prospectively look at that as a way to allow cities and counties and other local units of government to adjust their levies should we have a situation like we had last December that resulted in unallotment of a significant amount of state aids. And then finally, the emergency borrowing provision that is included in this bill. Representative Lincheski carried that bill for us, and we appreciate having that in the bill. We think that will give cities and counties some latitude to balance their budgets in the short term to address the cuts that are proposed, as well as the unallotments that occurred last December. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. And if testifiers would come forward and fill all the chairs.
Yes.
This looks like the education talk is coming forward. I wonder which part that might be, so please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. And, the department has concerns about Article 4, Section 2 of the bill, which would move the date for school districts to certify their proposed property taxes from September 30th to September 20th. That would reduce the amount of time that school districts have to certify their proposed levies after they see the levy limits from 22 days to 12 days, and we think that will be very difficult for the school districts to have time to thoroughly review their levy limits and make the changes that they need to make to ensure that their proposed property taxes are accurate. So we would encourage you to keep those dates the way that they currently are. We're concerned about the error rate on school district levy limits increasing as a result of the time pressure here.
Appreciate those concerns. Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dovlin. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. And I would just echo what Mr. Melcher said in regards to our school business office's ability to be able to adequately do the work in the timeline that's prescribed in the statute, or excuse me, in the delete all. But I would also like to just take an opportunity to thank the members of the committee and Representative Lanning and the chair for the language regarding the truth in taxation hearings.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace Kelleher with Minnesota School Boards Association, and I echo Mr. Meltzer's concerns about timing. I think we appreciate the truth in taxation hearing and the newspaper requirement being repealed, but in fact we want to make sure the public gets quality information. And when schools don't start till after Labor Day, that concise amount of information getting back in to you FARS and being spit back out to us so we can put it in our levy amounts and plan a school budget really handicap schools much differently than it does cities and counties. Last but not least, we'd like to thank you for the local fiscal impact note. We really see the value of that going forward and think that might be very beneficial for the legislature to know where they increase costs, not only at the state aid level, but also at the local level. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Sir, please. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kim Pearson, and I'm the CEO of New Boundary Technologies, and speaking on the legislation based on impact on my small business and other small and medium businesses in Minnesota. First, thank the committee for the fine job in tackling a very challenging budget situation that we've got and all of the hard work going into it. My comments particularly regard the local sales tax and are not regarding what the tax rates should be, but rather how they're implemented. And local sales taxes made sense back in the bricks and mortar economy of the 60s, where it would be a single tax rate based on where the location of the store was or the business. And that has proven to be difficult in the internet economy, where there's multiple tax rates based on where the customer is located, which resulted in the formation of the Streamline Tax Project that Minnesota is a member of to simplify how we do local taxes. My recommendation is that as a member of the project, the legislation be consistent with the Streamline Tax Project recommendations, and as I understand the legislation, it would take the number of local taxes that need to be administered from about 21 today to approximately 90, which would be going kind of counter to principle. I've provided written materials that show what the impact would be on our business. So I recommendation be that any sales and tax increases be done in a streamlined implementation manner, so that it minimizes the burden on small and medium businesses in order to implement it.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Representative Mark Court, members of the committee. My name is Jim Dostruitt. I'm a resident of Mound, and I'm a member of a Lakeshore homeowners group, largely in western Hennepin County, who have been hit with double-digit property tax increases for the last several years. We're really thankful to see the property tax reform rising in priority at the legislature, so we're very thankful for all the discussion that's going on. our group, some of the members in our group are maybe surprisingly in lower income brackets, such that a 37% increase in property taxes last year for one woman, a longtime resident, I'm estimating represents about 30% of her income just for property taxes. So there's some real anguish out there, and we're appreciative of these efforts. Our group has not settled on which of the pieces of legislation we would tend to favor yet. I'm here as much to learn as to contribute at this point, so I apologize for not being a little more polished about it. But there are a couple of questions that we've discussed, just a few of us, about this particular bill. One is we're a little concerned about the removing the requirements for a public hearing on truth and taxation. It was that place where our group was born. So I'm not sure if that's a smart move, and I've heard that there's some costs associated with that, and wondering if that's the issue with it, if the newspaper notification requirement could be waived and just rely on the notices and the property tax statement, which I think is all I've ever looked at anyway. So that's just a thought. Second question is we're wondering, a little concerned whether broadening the sales tax would actually give the relief to the people that most need it on property taxes. In other words, their taxes might go down, but their sales tax purchases go up. And I'm wondering if there's been an incidence study comparing the different bills addressing property tax reform to answer that question more definitively. The third thing is we're initially a little more intrigued with the idea of a greater reliance on income tax as a part of a property tax cap based on income. But like I said, we haven't gotten good consensus on that, but it's a question. Would the tax incidence from that kind of approach be more or less favorable than the sales tax approach? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. We do talk a lot about the incident report and those numbers, as you're mentioning, and those are huge. And we do take that into consideration, and there's been some efforts also to link property taxes more closely to income in the past and so forth. But I appreciate those comments, and we probably don't have time today, but I'd meet with you or meet with another member and go over some of those concerns more specifically on just what's been done and where we're looking at going and so forth.
We appreciate that very much.
Yeah, let's set that up.
I'll try to contact
you. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share your concern about rapidly increasing property taxes for the kind of people that you represent, the folks that you represent. Just want to clarify with regard to the truth in taxation, there will be more opportunities for citizens to come forward under this bill to express their concern or raise questions with regard to proposed budgets. And what we're doing with this bill is taking out this hearing that occurs way too late in the process. It's just shortly before a new budget year starts, and we're moving it up. We're giving people an opportunity to find out and express their concerns about proposed budgets earlier, and more than just one opportunity to do the same. So just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Thank you. You bet. Thank you very much for your testimony. Other testifiers, please come forward. Anyone else? If not, members, tomorrow we will hear amendments. What time do we go tomorrow? We will meet at 1 o'clock right here tomorrow. And we will take amendments. We have a couple items we're going to talk about. First of all, that the shift in payments and how that impacts things. And then Ms. Dalton will be going over a spreadsheet on the impacts of the county option revenue proposal. And then we will mark up the bill. and debate it and vote on amendments and vote on the ultimate division report. And so we have minutes to pass here, and that is from March 30th. Do I hear a motion? Representative Tilbury, I think again here, moves to approve the March 30th, 2009 minutes. Any discussion? Now I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The minutes are approved, and we are adjourned.